Chapter 26.
Each person has goals. Some of those goals are open, visible to all who care to observe. Others are more private, shared only with one's closest friends or associates. Some are dark secrets that one hopes will never see the light of day. But eventually, inevitably, those deepest goals must be made manifest if they are to be reached. They must be opened for someone to hear or see or offer assistance. Everyone who brings those goals into the light must be prepared for either acceptance or rejection. And he must be ready to bear the consequences. All of them.
Back aboard the Chimera, Thrawn had said that Paragosto City wasn't yet a full military zone. If it wasn't, Arinda had no interest in tackling the real thing. The first gauntlet was at the spaceport, where everyone leaving the transport had to show ID and answer some questions on their purpose for visiting Baetan in general, and Paragosto City in particular. After that was the Baetan Defense Forces soldiers and Navy troopers who'd set up a roadblock on the main road leading from the city to the Creek Path mining complex. It didn't look like they'd set up a full cordon yet, but Arinda guessed it was just a matter of time and numbers. And finally, there was a checkpoint just under the edge of Creek Path's shield, this one guarded by what appeared to be a mixed group of insurgents, malcontents, excitement seekers, and flat-out paid-for mercenaries and would-be mercenaries. But the IDs that Yularen had given them, partial real name and fake planetary address for Arinda, fake everything for Gudry, did the trick, bolstered by some amazingly good patter from Agent Gudry. Arinda had expected to have to carry that load. Clearly, Yularen hadn't been overstating Gudry's abilities.
"You did very well, Governor," Gudry murmured as they headed for a line of four-seater personnel transports just inside the last checkpoint. "Better than I expected."
"I'm glad I met with your approval," Arinda murmured back. "We'll start with my parents' house, then head into the mine area for a look around."
"We only needed your parents to get in," Gudry said. "We're in."
"We're only in past the barricade," Arinda pointed out. "Not into the mine complex itself."
"Not a problem," Gudry said. "Anyway, I want to see what's going on before it gets dark."
Arinda closed her fingers around his upper arm.
"One, don't be an idiot," she said, lowering her voice. "My father's a foreman, and my mother's an administrator. Having a familiar face along will get us past checkpoints or security patrols a lot easier than ISB bluster talk. Two, a mining facility is as bright at night as it is in the daytime. It's just the shadows that move to different places. And three, since by-the-book Imperials like to attack enemy positions in the dark, sundown will draw the insurgents' attention outward. Night is exactly what we want."
Gudry was silent another couple of steps. "Fine," he growled. "We'll do it your way. For now."
"We'll do it my way,"
Arinda agreed.
"For always."
Her first fear was that her parents might have been shifted to a different work schedule. That would have entailed hunting them down or risking a comm call. To her relief, her mother answered the door on the second ring.
"Yes?"
she said cautiously. She looked back and forth between them, her eyes settling on Gudry.
"What can I do for you?"
"You could start with a hug,"
Arinda suggested. Elenia jerked, her gaze snapping back to Arinda. There was a split second of confusion, and then her eyes widened.
"Arinda!"
she gasped, stepping forward and wrapping her arms around her daughter.
"I had no idea you were coming. What have you done to your hair?"
"It was a spur-of-the-moment thing, Mother," Arinda said,
giving Gudrey a triumphant smirk over her mother's shoulder. Gudrey had argued that the long blonde wig over Arinda's short black hair and the darkening lenses over her blue eyes wouldn't fool anyone. Obviously, Arinda had been right.
"I heard about the trouble here and wanted to make sure you and Father were all right."
"We're fine,"
Elenia said into Arinda's shoulder.
"Though that could change at any moment."
She pulled back and held out a hand to Gudrey.
"I'm Elenia Price."
"Matai Daw, ma'am," he said. "Arinda's told me so much about you that I feel I already know you."
Arinda felt her lip curl. In fact, everything Gudrey knew about her parents had been relayed in brief snatches of conversation aboard the transport. Dialogue that had consumed maybe 15 minutes of their time together. The rest of the voyage from Tanagra had been spent in silence, as Gudrey buried himself in schematics, maps, and the latest ISB dispatches.
"We need to talk, Mother," she said.
"Is Father in?"
"Yes, of course. Come in, come in."
A minute and another round of hugs later, the four of them were seated together in the living room.
"So, what's going on out there?"
Talmor asked.
"Did you come here to talk to the governor about fixing this mess?"
"Unfortunately, Governor Ristos doesn't listen much to anyone,"
Arinda said, running a critical eye over her father. He'd aged considerably in the weeks since their last holocall, with his face more lined, his eyes more careworn, and his posture slumping.
"In fact, I'm here very unofficially, which is why the hair and the islands is. Aside from making sure you two are safe, we need your help. A friend of Matai's may be inside the mine area, and we need your help to find him and get him out."
"Oh, he's in there all right,"
Gudrey said with just the right mix of concern and embarrassment.
"He's just the type to jump into something like this without thinking. I need to find him and get him out before the whole thing goes up."
"Let's hold on just a minute here,"
Talmor said.
"First of all, there's no one in the mine who isn't there of his or her own free will. They're fighting for people's rights against a repressive and dangerous government."
Arinda felt a knot form in her stomach. Thrawn had wondered which side her parents would be on in the standoff. At the time, Arinda had reflexively defended their loyalty. To hear her father talking like this.
"I think you may be painting with too wide a brush," she put in. "The Empire is quite multifaceted."
"Maybe on Coruscant it is,"
Elenia said.
"Maybe on Lothal, not on Baetan. Here the governor and his friends are, well, I'll just say it, they're corrupt, Arinda. Utterly corrupt. And the galaxy needs to hear about it."
Arinda began to breathe again. So, it was just the local politics that were the problem? She could handle that.
"I'll look into it when I get back to Lothal," she promised. "I can petition the Senate, possibly even the Emperor. There are procedures for that kind of thing."
"Yes, there are,"
Talmor said grimly.
"They're called revolution. I understand your concerns about your friend Matai, but there's really nothing you can do."
"And I'm perfectly willing to accept that," Gudrey said. "But I need to hear that from him. I've heard too many stories about people being press-ganged by pirates and insurgent groups. And yes, I know most of them are probably apocryphal. But I need..." He swallowed hard. "I just need to hear it from him."
"So we're going in," Arinda said. "You don't have to take us if you don't want to, but it would help if you could call ahead to someone you know."
Talmor sighed.
"You'll never get through the cordon without me. Fine, I'll take you. What's your friend's name?"
"Who knows?" Gudrey said. "I mean, he hasn't always been on the right side of the law, if you get my meaning. I knew him as Blaze Jonu, but I don't know what he's using here."
"That's helpful,"
Talmor said with a touch of sarcasm.
Will you at least recognize him if you see him?
Absolutely, Good reassured him. And he's a weapons electronics guy, so that should give us a clue as to where they might have him working.
Okay,
Talmor said, snagging his jacket from a coat tree by the door.
We'll go in and take a quick look around. But if and when they tell us to leave, we leave. Clear?
Clear, Arinda said. Before we go, I need to use the restroom.
Okay,
Talmor said.
You remember where it is?
Unless you and Mother have moved it, Arinda said with a tight smile. I'll be right back.
She was, too. But on the way to the restroom was the kitchen, and her mother's handbag hanging by its strap, as usual, on a peg behind the door. Out of sight of the others, Arinda opened the side pouch, hoping fervently that her mother hadn't changed her comm make and model since the last time she'd visited. But her mother was a creature of habit, and to Arinda's relief, the comm was the same one she'd had before. Quickly, Arinda swapped it out for the identical one she'd brought from Coruscant, then continued on to the restroom. It would have been nice to simply borrow the comm without bothering with the switch, but she didn't dare risk it. If her mother noticed it was missing, she'd use a finder ping to locate it, and that could bring up awkward questions at the wrong time and place. This way, unless Elenia decided to make a call, her comm's disappearance shouldn't be noticed. Gudri was still going on about his missing friend when Arinda rejoined them.
Ready?
Talmor asked.
Ready,
Arinda confirmed.
Thanks, Father.
You're always welcome,
Talmor said.
All right, let's do this.
The Terminator line had passed Paragosto City. The sky over the enemy stronghold at Creek Path was darkening with the approach of night. It was time. Thrawn's office was quiet, filled with the same twilight the insurgents below were experiencing. Surrounding him were holograms of Baitanese art, hovering like messengers from the past. Each piece speaking to the ethos, attitudes, and modes of thinking of the people and culture that had created it. Shape and flow, color and texture, style and medium, it all spoke to him. Even such factors as the type of art and the reputed value of the pieces offered clues as to how the people would act and react in warfare. Unfortunately, with this kind of insurgency, the patterns weren't as clear as a simple planetary uprising would be. Most of those under Night Swan's leadership were Baitanese, but there would be others who had journeyed here to join their cause. Those outside elements would distort and dilute the patterns laid out by the art. Ideally, he would have had time for a more leisurely, more focused study of the enemy, but there was no more time. Scrim Island had been a diversion. Something loud and obvious with which Night Swan had hoped to hold Imperial attention while he gathered his forces and weaponry under Creekpath's protective shield. Most likely, he had expected the island's recapture to persuade the Empire that Baton was no longer a threat, leaving him time for further preparation after they withdrew. But for once, he'd miscalculated. His time was coming to an end, along with the Baton insurgency. It was Thrawn's responsibility to do everything in his power to ensure it ended in the best possible way. His desk comm was already set to the proper frequency.
Yes?
A woman answered.
This is Admiral Thrawn aboard the ISD Chimera. I wish to speak to Night Swan.
There was a pause.
Excuse me?
The woman said.
Her voice holds disbelief and astonishment. This is Admiral Thrawn,
Thrawn repeated.
Please inform Night Swan that I wish to speak with him.
This time the pause was longer.
One moment.
It was 40 seconds before the comm came active again.
This is Night Swan,
the familiar voice said.
His tone holds caution, but little surprise.
How did you get this frequency?
It was one of many contained in the records of the freighter Commander Vanto and I took from your Nomad.
Ah,
Night Swan said.
His voice now holds dark humor within the caution.
Careless of whoever flew that ship last. Well, with anyone else I'd expect an ultimatum, or at least some gloating. But neither strikes me as your style. Why did you call?
I wish to speak with you.
We are.
Together, face to face, with no barriers between us. There is a quiet snort.
Certainly. Do you want to come to my heavily armed camp, or shall I come to yours?
There is a field 2 kilometers northeast of the Creek Bath facility, Thrawn said. It includes a ridge of low hills that block it from casual observation, but is easily accessible from your camp. Another pause.
You're serious, aren't you?
Night Swan said.
His voice holds confusion.
You really want me to come there? Out from under the shield?
If it would make you feel more comfortable, I will arrive first,
Thrawn offered.
As you know, I have a civilian freighter, one that would not draw undue attention.
You'll have guards, of course.
I will order them to stay with the freighter and out of firing distance. Be assured that I do not seek your death.
Just my capture?
You misunderstand, Thrawn said. Your value to me cannot be realized by your capture. It certainly cannot be realized by your death.
You've piqued my curiosity,
Night Swan said.
Caution, but also a rising interest.
What is my value to you?
I will only speak of it face to face,
Thrawn said.
I will not discuss it in a calm conversation.
I see.
Another pause.
You say you don't want to kill me. I like that part. What makes you think I won't kill you?
Because you value life, Thrawn said. Because I am the only guarantee that the civilians crowded within your stronghold will not be slaughtered. Should others lead the attack, they will almost certainly kill everyone and destroy everything in their path. You do not want that.
I didn't ask the civilians to come here,
Night Swan said.
There is fresh pain and anger and resentment.
Some I couldn't help. The ones whose homes are under the shield. But the others, I asked them not to come. But we couldn't keep them out.
I understand, Thrawn said. I also understand that you see that burden the way I would see it. A pledge to do all in my power to prevent unnecessary deaths. That is why I know you will allow me to return to the Chimera in peace.
The pause this time was longer. Nearly 11 seconds. A reading of expression and body stance would be useful, but the connection was only audio. If Night Swan accepted his invitation, a more complete reading would be possible.
As I say, curiosity,
Night Swan said.
All right, why not? The northeast field. When?
I will be there in 1 hour. You may arrive at your convenience.
1 hour. I'll be there.
It took some fancy talking on Talmor's part, but eventually he, Arinda, and Gudri were allowed through the mine's outer perimeter. There were no personal transports in sight, but Talmor assured them the central part of the complex was only another kilometer inward, and they set off on foot. And as they did, as Arinda had expected him to, her father launched into a monologue of Creek Path's recent history.
The irony is that the governor has himself to blame for the fact that we've got a shield at all,
he said, as they stepped out of the way of a speeder truck heading inward. its cargo bay loaded with boxes. Arinda squinted as the vehicle went past, caught the words Macrid String on the sides.
When the trouble started on Dinesh, Creek Path's owners pleaded with him for some protection. All he really wanted was a couple hundred troops to beef up his checkpoints. But the governor wanted to save all the soldiers for his own protection. So instead he found a used DSSO2 regional shield and had it set up.
Nice,
Arinda said, glancing behind him at Gudri walking on her father's other side. The sun was long since gone, but as she'd predicted, the complex's lights more than made up for it. And in their glow, she could see a small smile playing around the agent's lips. Small wonder. DSS shields were used all across the Empire, and somewhere in Gudri's ISB training, he'd undoubtedly learned how to take them down. Yularen had suggested they eliminate the shield, but in the kind of off-handed way that had implied he was mostly joking. Before the evening was over, he might find himself surprised.
"I'd have thought the operators would have tried to sabotage it before you kicked them out," Gudri commented.
"Before the insurgents kicked them out,"
Talmor corrected, a bit stiffly.
"I might agree with some of their grievances, but I'm not one of them. Anyway, from what I understand, they were rounded up and escorted off the premises before they even knew what was happening."
"And then Nightswan came in?"
Arinda asked. Talmor frowned at her.
"Who's Nightswan?"
"The group's leader," Arinda said. "Didn't you know?"
"I told you, I'm not with these people,"
he said shortly.
"You said your friend was a tech, but Ty?"
"Mostly a tech, but he dabbled in a lot of things," Gudri said.
"He might even have been brought in to keep the shield running. You know where the generator is?"
"Over there somewhere,"
Talmor said, pointing.
"I guess we might as well head in that direction as any other."
Arinda let them get a couple of steps ahead. Then, picking her moment, she slipped behind a parked speeder truck and angled off. She passed that truck, slipped around another one, and dropped to one knee where she'd be out of sight if Gudri or her father looked in her direction. She pulled out her mother's comm and punched her father's frequency. He answered on the second signal.
"Elenia, is something wrong?"
I don't feel well,"
Arinda said, wheezing as if she were having some sort of reaction.
I think it's something in the air."
"Hang on, I'll call the hospital,"
Talmor said, his voice anxious.
"No, it's not that bad,"
Arinda said, wheezing a little more. She had no idea how good her impression was, but the strain and wheezing would hopefully cover up any deficiencies.
"Can you come home? I need you and Arinda to come home."
"Yes, of course. Arinda!"
He broke off, undoubtedly wondering where she disappeared to.
"Please hurry,"
Arinda said. She turned off the comm, slipped it into her shoulder bag, and stood up. Just in time. Even as she turned back, her father and Gudri appeared around the end of the speeder truck.
"Arinda!"
Talmor called.
"Here,"
Arinda called back, hurrying to them.
"Sorry, I saw a group of men and wanted to check them out."
"What did they look like?" Gudri asked.
"Nothing like the description you gave me, I'm afraid," Arinda said. "Is something wrong?"
"Your mother's been taken ill,"
Talmor said, taking her arm.
"We have to go home right away."
"Is it serious?"
"She says no,"
Talmor said.
"But we're going anyway. Come on, Matai."
"Oh, wait a minute. I need to find my friend," Gudri objected. "Can't I stay? I promise I won't get in anyone's way."
"I don't think,"
Talmor began.
"That's a good idea,"
Arinda interrupted him.
"You can find your way back to the house, right?"
"Sure," Gudri said. "You two go on. I'll be fine.
I can't let you stay without me,
Talmor said. But the words were mechanical. His thoughts were clearly with his wife.
I promised.
Let me talk to him, Arinda offered. Without waiting for a response, she took Gudri's arm and pulled him a few steps away.
Well, this is damn awkward, Gudri whispered. The old cow gets sick now.
You can do this alone, right?
Arinda asked, trying hard to ignore the fact he just insulted her mother.
Of course, he growled. Trouble is your old man won't let me.
I'll change his mind, Arinda said. That last speeder truck, the one with the Makrid string crates? You want to find out where it went. Makrid string is a...
Is a wire explosive, he interrupted. Thanks, I know. I'm more worried about Night Swan's collection of police gunships and skim fighters.
Arinda felt her jaw drop. You saw gunships? How many?
I didn't see them, Gudri said patiently. I saw a spare parts dump, with enough material to patch up a couple dozen of them.
Arinda winced. Air combat vehicles. Just what they needed. You need to find and tag them, she said. And...
Yeah, thanks. I know my job, he said. You just get your old man off my back and out of here, okay?
Okay.
Still holding his arm, she turned back to her father.
Okay, we've made a deal, she told him. You and I will go home and see to Mother. He'll stay for 1 hour. 1 hour and look for his friend. If he hasn't found him by then, he'll come out. Okay?
Talmor hesitated. His face screwed up with indecision.
Arinda!
It'll be all right, Father,
Arinda said, letting go of Gudri's arm and taking her father's.
He'll be fine, and Mother needs us. Come on. Come on!
All right,
Talmor said reluctantly, as he allowed her to pull him back toward the perimeter.
Just be careful, Matai, and don't mess with anything.
With her father distracted by worry, it was easy to guide him back out through a different checkpoint, one where the guards didn't know that three had gone in, but only two were coming out. Fortunately, the men and women at this point, too, knew Foreman Talmor Price and didn't search or even question him.
How many of them, Arinda wondered, would still be alive when morning came?
But that wasn't her problem. These people were in the center of a combat zone. They'd willingly place themselves here, and what happened next was on their own heads. That went for Gudri, too. As for Arinda, she had a more important task before her. The job she'd planned from the very beginning of this standoff. The one only she could pull off. Time to get started.